Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, our guest is a blackjack player named Small Cap. Small Cap has been on our show twice before, once when he told us about a black dildo, and once when he told us about a hooker in Central America. I'm not sure what he's going to tell us about today. Small Cap, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks, Bob. Good to be here.
Since we last saw you, you hung out in the Los Angeles card rooms for a while. What happened there?
Well, first of all, it's really good to be here. Thanks for having me on again. And so I moved from New Jersey to Santa Monica about a year ago. And then I started wandering in the California card rooms to see if I could find an edge or something. And I went into Commerce Casino. And I knew about banking, but I didn't realize there was that much action. So I started banking some of the games. And
are there opportunities on the player side on any of those games or no? Or just not as good banking?
Yes, there is. The dealers will rubber band there. So, I mean, you can find a whole card game once in a while. But, like, it's annoying.
You said dealers will rubber band? What does that mean?
They'll switch. Like, they'll every half hour, they'll switch tables. Something like a half hour, 45 minutes. It's more of the banking. I walked in there, and there's a lot of people. The games are horrible, and there's just a lot of people betting a lot of money. Like it was more than Vegas casinos I would see. I mean, there, like Baccarat, there'd be tons of players daily that buy in for 20,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's just so how I got into it is I you know, it's a couple miles from my house, even though it takes like an hour and a half to get there. And I started banking blackjack, just what I was comfortable with. Then I found out that you can bank the side bets. Because I'm like, oh, well, sometimes there's not that much main bet action, but the side bets make up for everything. So you have – and no, when people bank there, people get pissed because people put in 5-10 grand and they can't cover every single bet on the table. So people won't play like their $25 side bet if they hit the main thing. But so I would go there, I'd put like $100,000 on deposit, and I would just withdraw it. So like no matter what they bet, they would get paid fully. And people didn't seem to have that big of a problem. So I started banking blackjack. Then I moved over to 3-card poker. And someone bet $20 on the 6-card bonus. And they have this weird payout over there where the 6-card bonus, I don't even remember what the odds were. All I know is on a $20 bet, I had to pay the guy 15 grand. And everybody's betting like 150 in a round per table. I'm like, man, this is going to be a long time till I get that money back. And once I did that, I noticed I was having a hard time on the weekdays finding action on blackjack, carnival games, or whatever. But there was the Baccarat section was always full. And I did like a quick look at it, and the commission schedule was 1% of action. So the main, you know, the main bets, you didn't have an edge, and that's like all I processed. But then like I went back again, and I'm like, I asked how much the side bet limits were, and you could bet up to like 1,400 a hand on the side bets each bet. So
wow,
yeah.
And these are bets where you would have a 5%, 10%, 15% edge.
Yeah. Well, like I did this a year ago, so I don't know the edges exactly, but I think it's like around 7.5 for the dragon, 10.5 or 10-something for panda, and ties like what, 14-something. Yeah, and I mean,
so big edge, but really big variance.
Yes, and I couldn't sim it, so it was kind of like it was just like intuitively, I was like, let me just see how this looks and feels. Like I have to try to play it. And I started doing that, and I played every day for 3 months. And I won like $350,000 banking baccarat, and they eventually barred me. And I'll get to it why they barred me, but they barred me over a really, really dumb reason.
You prefer to be barred over a good reason.
No, like it's just a reason that makes sense. Like, hey, you're banking games. Don't bank, you know?
Yeah, you're cutting into our revenue by banking, right?
Yeah, cool, makes sense. Yeah, I'll see you later. But so the manager came up to me and was just like, dude, you got to start playing a little bit. Like, you know, you're betting $50 when it's your turn to bank because you have to play two hands, bank two hands. Although with Baccarat, it's not like blackjack. You can get away with only playing one hand before your bank. But I always played both hands just to not, like, you know, what was I giving up? Like 50 cents or something? So he's like, you got to start betting. Like, you can't just bet $50 and do what you're doing. And I'm like, all right. So I started betting, like, I did the math. I was like, started off 1,000, started off 2,000. And actually, before I get into this, I should probably say how I lasted that long, you know, playing every day. I used the same thing I used in blackjack. I was super friendly, and I tried to make friends with, like, the high rollers there. And I'd walk around with, like, cartons of cigarettes. Alcohol's not free there, so I used to go buy them alcohol and bring it to them. And I would just give them tips. A couple times, like, a guy lost 20 grand and was, like, complaining that, like, he didn't have money to get home or whatever. So I gave him, like, $200, and he remembered that. And every time I was there, he would look for me, and he'd play against me. So, like, you know. And these are people that are there every day. It's not like they're not different people. So I kind of used the same method I used in blackjack, and I tipped the floor people like crazy. The dealers I gave a little bit of money to, just enough to not, like, just enough to be comfortable in playing, but the floor people I tipped a lot. Probably like 25,000-40,000.
Wow.
Per day?
No, hell no. All
so
all,
when you say you made $325,000, is that after tips?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It was. And that's what I was left with. So sure.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, it was really nice though because I got to feel like a normal patriot for once. I didn't have to use a different name. I got to put money on deposit. I could sign it off. And then the manager's like, "Hey, you got to start banking. I mean, you got to start playing more." And for me, like, with my history, I started, but it really started a really bad slope for me. I started betting, and, you know, it was hard. Like, with blackjack, there's so many rules, and there is no emotions involved. It's just like, do this, do that. You play so many hours, you're going to win. With this stuff, I couldn't sim it. Some players were getting angry at me, and it kind of, like, tilted me emotionally, so I started betting at the end of the year with the rationalization that, like, hey, I'm up like 600,000-700,000. If I lose a little bit, I'm going to be in a different tax bracket. Maybe I have an edge. So it was complete rationalization. It was all bullshit. But I started betting.
So your goal was to lose $300,000 so you could save $10,000 on taxes.
Kinda. I mean,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
But no, I figured I had a shot of winning and a shot of losing. If I lost, I didn't lose all.
So it's 50-50.
I figured it was a little bit of a rebate.
Actually, I mean, there is a certain logic there, right? Like, it's sort of like a loss rebate.
Yeah.
If you made one big bet at the end of the year,
you go into a different bracket. But I didn't even do the math right on the bracket. It just was a rationalization. I'm just being completely honest.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, I might have an edge. I'm going to try it. I do always like to gamble. It's just, you know, and that's dangerous in this business, you know? It's, and I was going through a really, really super rough time in my life. I'll get into that all that later, but it was just like a storm of different things. So long story short, super embarrassing, but whatever. I guess I've said a lot of embarrassing things here. I won 700,000 playing Baccarat in a week, and then I lost.
Like, just gambling. Just
straight up gambling. Started a $5,000 bank bet, $10,020, and then one night I made $250,000, and I'm like, this is amazing cover. They're never going to bar me. Then I lost like $680,000.
That's even better cover.
Yeah.
But that's when you got barred.
And I got barred for playing Baccarat. Straight up gambling. Like, they just were like, yeah, we know your card counting skills. We don't want you playing. I'm like, I'm playing Baccarat, dude. I'm not doing nothing. I'm like, you know, I'm not counting the dragon either. I'm like, I'm banking your games, and I lost control. I'm like, all right, cool, whatever.
but we talk about the idiocy of casinos so many times, and here's an instance where a guy is just gambling his balls off, and they bar him because some pit boss knew you were a card counter.
Yeah, so if anybody wants to play there, it's Mike Hard Rock Hollywood. He went. So in 2015, he was at Morongo. First time I met him, And he's such a dick because he just bars people. Like, he could just back people off. He always comes with security. So, like, this is the third time he's personally barred me. So he 86'd me in Morongo with security. And I'm like, the first time I met him, I went up to him. I'm just like, dude, you know I'm just going to walk out and leave. Like, I don't know. That doesn't really intimidate me. I'm not going to give you a problem. Do you really need the security? And he was just like, oh, no, it's just what I do. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then the security at Morongo, I winded up tipping them like $25, and they were super cool. It's like, yeah, this guy's a dick. I mean, just, then in Hard Rock Hollywood,
so you tipped the guys who were
evicting you. It's not a bad strategy.
Ah, well,
because I mean, I tipped. It can get confrontational. I think it's all about how the player reacts. Because I've heard other players, like, when they get barred, if you just have calm and composure and be like, you know, is this necessary? What are you doing? Like, oh, sorry, I used my brain playing blackjack. You know, it's not a big deal. And then if you're cool with the people that are barring you, I mean, I've been caught in a lot of sticky situations. Two times it's been really, really bad, and I learned from that. And now I just treat everybody like a human. I'm like, hey, I know you have a job. I know you have a family at home. I'm not trying to do anything wrong. Walk me into my car, and that's it. And I'll tip them money. Yeah. And they'll laugh about it. It's never really a big deal. Hard Rock Hollywood, I spent a lot of time there. He evicted me.
He's from in Florida.
Yeah, by Miami. And he evicted me from my room. It's not really necessary, but I'm like, okay, cool, whatever. And then he showed up at Commerce working there at like a month and a half into everything. And I didn't really recognize him at the beginning. You know, I should have, but like, I didn't recognize him. I just remember him as this, you know, when you just tell someone's looking at you and they hate you, and he would just give me these dirty looks. And how I realized it was him is I pulled $100,000 down at the cage to go bank one of the games, and I get to the table and I have $95,000, and I'm like, what happened? You know, and I went to the manager. I'm like, hey, either I dropped a chip or you guys shorted me. And they're like, okay, we'll look into it. And I winded up dropping a chip, a $5,000 chip on the ground the minute I got it from the cage. And some guy picked it up and started gambling with it. And the funny thing is he left the casino right after. He came back 2 hours and they wound up arresting him. And that's how I met Mike. And he's like, you don't remember me, do you? I'm like, you look familiar, but no. He's like, I barred you from Morongo and Hard Rock Hollywood. So I'm like, all right. So after I was done betting everything, you know, they barred me and I was like, really? I was just shocked. I'm like, what do you guys think I was doing?
Didn't try talking to like a higher up pit boss, or
I told you it was a bad spot in my life, and I was pretty I was pretty relieved. I mean, I shouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, right. Like,
it's probably a blessing to get barred at that point.
Honestly, in the last year, I've called them back and like, hey, you know, I'm just like, hey, I'm gonna get an attorney if you guys don't want to handle this privately. Like, I think you're not allowed to bar me what you did in California. I think the trespass rule on a public place is only 24 hours. Not 100% sure, but I'm not like aching to get back there. I know I'm not really going to get action down. And
this Mike guy seems to be stalking you. Is there any chance that he's going to break into the studio and keep you from doing this interview?
No, he's really fat. He probably wouldn't fit through the door.
All right, Mike, if you're listening.
No. So I guess I'll get into... So I haven't really played much. I've took a year off after that. Like, I just wanted to evaluate what's going on. It was like a pretty try. Like, my bankroll was up to like $1.8 million at the top.
This was after your 750 after first week?
After the degenerate binge, yeah. And then it went back down, and I had a rough time. I spent...
But losing six, you're still at 1.2. There's people listening who think that's an enviable bankroll.
True, but it's hard to lose $600,000 a week. It feels kind of weird. It doesn't. It's not the most fun. It's but I also spent. I spent about $300,000 in therapy. Like, I had a lot of stuff going on. During the time I started, I'm not going to give my exact age, but that's pretty dumb. I am. So 2 years ago, I started having these like massive panic attacks. And I was on a gambling trip in Canada, and I did really well, and I had a couple hundred grand, and I started having panic attacks, and I'm like, I thought it was like, how am I going to get the money back? Do I have to deposit, open a bank account? And then after that trip, like, I kept having this, like, massive anxiety. So I went to my doctor, and he was like, yeah, just go talk to this woman. And I'm like, all right. So I talked to a therapist, and she was – so honestly, like, it's – I guess I'm, like, a unique individual. My story isn't normal. And she was the coolest I've seen, like, probably 12 therapists, and she was super cool. She was never anyone that shamed the gambling or anything like that. She just said, you know, I believe anybody could have any lifestyle they want. Where a lot of the other therapists will fit you in, like, a cookie-cutter model. So the panic attacks had nothing to do with the gambling or the money. It was all – I had – I mean, I'll talk about it. I don't think I'll get into super detail, but I had repressed sexual child abuse as a kid, and I didn't remember it. And it was from – with my family. So it was a really, really hard time in my life. So I was sober for about 9 years before that. Thinking like, you know, hey, I'm just like a drunk, you know, an alcoholic. That was my problem. But the whole thing was like nobody was looking at how I was being raised, you know, and my parents used to just shame me into like, hey, you're an addict, you're an addict, you're an addict. But like they used to leave me home from like 8 a.m. to like 1 a.m. working. Nobody was home. And then all that other stuff that went on. I just really don't want to talk about it just because it's uncomfortable. But so I did that stuff and you know, like, it's not that I didn't remember. Like, I guess I was in complete denial. I had it. If you even remember, like, if you look back at my first show, we were talking about how my dad encouraged me to play blackjack. And, you know, I think you made a comment about, like, oh, he seems like a great father. Like, it's perfect. And I listened to it and was like, wow. So my perspective's completely changed. And now that I think about it, like, my dad taught me how to play blackjack at 12 and 13 and snuck me in a casino. Like, I don't think I'd ever do that to a child, you know, like, these are things that were just like, when I'm telling, like completely normal until somebody pointed out, like they took me on a nude beach when I was 6 and 7, like just weird stuff that like when I, and I'm an only child. So like in my head, I'm like, maybe this is what normal people do. And so I had a really cool therapist explain to me like how bad it was. I do miss my family, but, you know, for the time being, I just haven't really spoken to them much in 2 years. And last year when I was doing the Baccarat thing, it was around the holidays, and it was the first holiday to be really by myself. So, like, it really got up some emotions. So I was nervous. I thought I could never gamble again. I processed a lot of this stuff with my therapist. And it was more like, you know, I can do whatever I want in life. Just if I'm using it to escape emotions, there's probably not going to be a very good outcome or not a fulfilling outcome. Whereas if I use it to, like, so the reality of my life right now is I could either go get a job and make $50,000, $75,000, or I could continue to play blackjack and make that in, like, EV, like, three trips. So, I mean, it's hard, you know, I'm not saying I'm not going to get barred, but so I didn't make any money for a year. I went to Promises Malibu. It was like an addiction treatment because once I relapsed for a month and a half on alcohol, and I got a third DUI. I had 2 DUIs prior. I got a DUI. So
Want to point out your 2 prior DUIs were from many years ago.
Yeah. First one was 11 years ago. Second one was 9 years ago. And this one was from 9 because I was sober the whole time. And then I stopped drinking. I went over there. And I was looking at serious charges, like 6 months in jail, 10 years loss of license. So I went to the treatment center. It was super cool. It was a trauma-based treatment center. So, like, they really didn't focus that much on the drinking. But there was a lot of shame that came up from the – so, like, I went there. And then when I moved to California, I lost control of the Baccarat. And I really think a big part of that was they were helping me in so many other areas, but they were wrong on the gambling piece. Like, they linked it all into an addiction. Like, and you know what? I shouldn't even say they were wrong. They just said, this is something you shouldn't do. You can't do it. When they didn't really look at my other options. And like, in my head, I'm like, do you realize how I'm paying you guys? Like, the treatment center was like $85,000. And, I went there twice. And then they referred me to an outpatient place.
Do they give you a quantity discount when you go back the second time?
I have the frequent flyer card.
Yeah.
No, they don't. Last time I was there, they had this chic from, Somewhere in the Middle East, and he had his whole entourage there, and they have plenty of people to buy. So no, it's like, it's almost like a casino system. It's almost like
it's a hard thing for me to wrap my head around. The you know, as blackjack players, we're so obsessed with our edge and the EV, and to it's hard for me to wrap my head around that idea of just going off like that. But as you say, I guess you can. You know, your sick part of your brain can justify it in some way. Oh, this is cover or whatever. Yeah.
But here, I think I have a little different take on two, and I might be different than most APs. Because I do have the gambling background prior. Like, before I ever got into card counting, like, I used to play blackjack and lose. My dad taught me how to play. I lost 70,000 before I ever started, you know, before I ever started learning to card count. But also, too, which I've noticed in my life, the things that are most destructive and, like, shameful are also my biggest assets, because I'm able to get away with a lot of stuff and play a lot of hours because maybe I'm not – my like, cover act is not really that much of an act. It's just me. You know what I mean? And I know how to – It's just different. So with the EV, yeah, like, it was painful. Like, so when I made a $20,000 bet in blackjack – I can also rationalize the other way, like, oh, I'm only losing $200. It's kind of fun. You know?
So yeah. you mentioned that when you took this 700,000 run up and then 680 back or whatever, yeah. But how much EV did you keep track of how much EV you actually lost?
Yeah, about probably 60,000, 65,000 in EV.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, so here's my take on it. So even though we have an edge and we're playing, I'm not going to say we, at least I have an edge. And when I'm playing, gambling's still affecting the brain the same way as the other person is betting, even though we have an edge, like for me. So it was very a slippery slope. Like if I, and I think even when I play now, like I don't think about life, like I'll be sometimes in my apartment, be like, you know, I'd really like to get married, have kids. Like, it's just about the game. So it is a distraction, regardless if we're winning or not. But what's, you know, I think what made me really good at blackjack or handle the swings of losing and not like get emotional or not really care is, I don't know if you guys know about what dissociation is, but I got diagnosed with complex PTSD. So like in tough times of my childhood, I have this. It's sometimes a skill, I don't even want to call it a skill, a coping mechanism that you could acquire that you're inside your body, but you're not there. And it sounds crazy, but like if you Google it, it is a skill. Yeah. So like during really rough times, you know, you just get your face handed to you and you're counting and your edge is really small. Like you can
just check out emotionally.
You're checked out. You're checked out. So that's okay. I just really needed to know myself like super well. Am I using this thing that I have to make money, or am I using it to avoid emotions? And if I'm using to avoid emotions, I need to sit and process that stuff. You know, and I've grown a lot. I stopped playing because I didn't want to, you know, I could have easily lost all my money.
Yeah.
You know.
But so, okay, yeah. But so now you're back.
Yeah.
Right? You're healthy. You're working out. You're and
dating. Feel good. Yeah.
And so when did you start playing again? How long ago did you?
You
took a foray into day trading for a while, right?
Yeah, I did.
Which is just gambling, right?
But it was non-stigma. And that was the thing I was trying to tell like all these treatment centers. Like, yeah, you know, you're used to be a financial advisor. You're a professional gambler. We get that. You know, trading would be amazing. I'm like, you guys are fucking idiots. Like, oh, sorry. Yeah,
it's okay.
you guys are idiots. Like, blackjack is way safer than trading. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, oh, you just think it's less stigmatized. You know?
One is business and legitimate, and the other is gambling.
Yeah, and the gambling's guaranteed. You know, and the so I paid some gentleman $10,000 I found online to mentor me to day trade e-mini futures. And
paying somebody you meet online, what could go wrong with that?
Yeah.
Whatever. I've had some good experiences. I should clarify.
We can talk about those girls.
Yeah, but
later.
They're not with dudes. There's one time in band camp. No, I'm kidding. So
the day trading didn't.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, so this guy. I would have to wake up at like 6:30 in the morning because I'm on West Coast time, And the thing I found out, it's like paint drying. It's just really, really slow. And you might have 1 to 2 trade setups a day. It's a lot like poker. And if the setup looks like this, you're supposed to do it. But sometimes if it looks like this, don't do it. And sometimes it looks like this, don't do it.
Well, that sounds like voodoo.
It's similar. And then when the guy was showing me, like, because he would do live trading classes. And I'm like, oh, that's a cool way to learn, you know? And then the setup would come, and he'd put the arrow after the setup come, after you already see it. I'm like, wait a second. You know, like, so if the setup was, like, super clear, and how it worked, there is, like, some validity to it. It was called the Keltner channel. And the Keltner chart, you would set up your chart that the last 550 trades is one bar. The Keltner channel is a line that draws it, which it'll average the last 50 prices of those bars. So that's the median price. And then it went 2.5 standard deviations above and 2.5 below. So, like, when I was learning it, I'm like, this seems something cool. It's similar to blackjack, you know, like, let me get into it. And then once I started doing it, you could see some clear setups, but also, too, no one told me about the commission. Each trade was, they would say the commission is like 59 cents per contract. So I was doing like 150 contracts because they say do 1% of your bankroll, and the commission was like 600 a trade. So once the guy told me about the Keltner channels and stuff, and there were a couple other indicators, I'm like, you know what? What made me good at blackjack? I read a couple books, I learned how to count cards, but then I put like my own spin on it, and that's what did it. So I started doing something. I pulled about 2 years worth of data, because NinjaTrader, you can download data and replay it and fast forward it. So I traded about 2 years, and I found that I was making 3 to 4 points a week after a 2 year period. With the commission, it was 1.7 points, and to me, that's too much risk. For that, and you know, and I was just tired of like obsessively running data. I'm like, my life sucks. All I'm doing is running data on a computer. And so I went back to him and I started like asking him stuff. And I'm like, something's up. And you know, I've really learned to trust myself. I have a really good intuition, and sometimes, like, you know, I might be wrong about the thing, but I'm always able to pick up on something if something's not right, you know? And that's what's made me really good with like heat deflection, like, or like, it's just weird. Like, I can tell if there's something going on. And I started just asking probing questions for the guy. And he was like, yeah, I trade 9 contracts. I'm like, you trade 9 contracts. You're recommending 1% of your bankroll. I'm like, that's cool and everything. I'm not judging how much money you have, but like, you have an edge and it's compounding and there's no max bet. Like, what's the deal?
Right.
And when I told him 150 contracts, he looked at me like I was crazy. I'm like, well, you know, I'm using like 950,000, using 1%. That's what you said, right? And it's like, so honestly, like, I don't know if this guy has an edge or not. I think maybe he's break even, and with commission, he's not really doing well.
Well, he gets you to pay $10,000, and he gets other students to pay $10,000.
Yeah,
sounds like dice looking. Control.
Sounds like he's doing good.
Then, like, I'm like, you know what? So now my bankroll was down to like 820 grand. So, like, I was down like $1 million off my high after treatment and everything. And I live in Santa Monica now, and it feels like no matter how much money you have, it's not enough there.
It's a very expensive place to live.
Yeah, I think I'm going to wind up moving. Like, So when I sold my condo in Jersey, I have a 720 square foot one bedroom, and I pay $5,200 a month for it. And it's stupid. And I'm like, it's, I don't know. And like, I stayed home the whole year. Like, it's not like I traveled, you know? Like, so it was confining. So I'll probably move out of there eventually.
So when did you go back to blackjack? When?
A couple weeks ago.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's been really good. You know, I was always, you know, like, oh my God. You know, I talked to my therapist. It was like, I can't believe I lost my edge. Like, and that was the thing. Like, I can't believe I used to, you know, I used to be fine. I used to do this for 5 years. And they're like, you just made one bad mistake. Be up. Be easy on yourself. And I'm like, okay. And then ever since then, she's helped me identify my triggers. I never thought there were feelings that I thought before I did something stupid. I just thought, oh, I do this, you know? So I can give you like a concrete example. Last night I was playing, and in my head, before, this was like an unconscious thought. I'm like, you know, it's close to the holidays, and I'm going to be in I'm in Vegas for the holidays. This is pretty shitty, you know? Like, you know, it's. And then after that, I was like, uh-oh, the manager's staring at me kind of weird. Maybe I should go make a baccarat, you know? And I'm like, and then I didn't do anything, and I was just like, oh, wow. So there's always like thought. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. So I think I needed to do a lot of work before I started playing again. And I feel like I did it. And, you know, I feel like I can make mistakes. And things are good. I got a little different strategy how I'm playing. And I always was curious if this strategy was going to work. And it's I'm surprised how well it's working, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And I assume you don't want to go into too much detail about what you're doing.
I mean, I'm counting cards. I'm always playing blackjack. But I'm just using maybe a lot more of the – I'm just looking a lot more – I'm just not spreading that much. And I have a higher minimum bet, like a real high minimum bet. and I'm doing front money. And I mean, that's as much as I want to go, but I think that covers enough detail.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised how well it's taking. And I still believe they think I'm counting cards, but I think they think I'm like any other gambler. Like when you see low cards, you raise your bet. Like, aren't you supposed to do that? And, I mean,
yeah, we were talking over lunch and I mentioned that I know several players who have all expressed the idea that you get far less heat betting $5,000 than you do betting $500.
Yeah, and even when I think because they see so many counters spread from 25 to 50 to 2 by 1,000 and like 20-30 spreads, that they're like, that's what you're supposed to do. And the funny thing is, like, I've been playing and, like, I've seen counters come in and out of and, like, I've seen them get heat and the staff talk about them. And then I'm asked, so my philosophy was that, like, oh my God, everybody's so sharp in Vegas. Every single person can count cards and high limit. And the fact is, like, no, they're just watching for bet spread. They're just looking for, because I would ask these people, like, hey, what do I do with this hand? What do I do with that hand? And they'll have to look
up. They don't know.
Yeah, they're like, well, you, and they're so cool with me. They're like, well, this is what it says, but if you can count cards, you're not supposed to do this, and it's in the system right there. And they're like, yeah, but you have to have a bet spread for that. Don't worry about it. And, I still tip. I still believe in it. A lot of counters don't, but, you know, I don't hate the casino employees. I actually kind of like them. You know, like, they're just trying to feed their family. I enjoy having conversations with them, and I just try to be real with them. I'm usually like an open book, and I think if you can just, if you have social skills, which I think a lot of APs don't, or just, I don't know, I haven't met that many, but it just seems like, you know, they're either like engineers, computer guys, like, who are very smart people, but, you know, it's hard to have social skills with that mindset, you know. But that's about it. Things have been going pretty well so far.
All right, we were talking to Small Cap, and we're going to take a brief commercial break, and we'll be right back talking more to Small Cap.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. January, Monday through Thursday, 3 a.m. to 2:59 a.m. is the $500,000 spin-to-win promotion. Earn 500 slot points or 2,000 video poker points, and you earn a virtual spin right at your machine. Prizes are all points from $2,500 to $100,000, which means from $7.50 to $300, or they're free play, $5 to $100. You may earn up to 4 spins a day. Throughout the first week of the promotion, the spins have been averaging about 0.5%. On Martin Luther King Day, next Monday, there will be a $32,000 hot seat promo from 8 a.m. to midnight, where approximately every 3 minutes, one player randomly receives $100 in free play. This will be in addition to the regular spin-to-win promotion on the same day. The second week of free video poker classes this semester, Tuesday, January 16th, beginning at noon in the Silverado Lounge, is Beginning Double Bonus. This will be followed up at 2 p.m. with Beginning Double Double Bonus. These games are good building blocks towards the games that come later in the semester. You never know which game will prove useful in promotions that are coming up the road. The classes are free, and if you're at least 21 years of age, you're welcome. The Silverado Lounge is the first one you come to once you reach the casino from the parking garage elevators. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on many of the games. The game of the week is 10 Play with Dream Card. Dream Card is a 10 coin per line game where periodically the last card on the deal is designated as a dream card, which means it turns into the card with the highest expected value. This leads you to more quads and more royal flushes, but it costs you twice as much to play. Dream Card is always positive EV compared to the same game without Dream Card. The Dream Card frequency depends on the game, and there is no special strategy required to play Dream Card. If you know the base game, you know how to play the Dream Card version of it.
All right, we're talking to Small Cap. 10 minutes ago, you said you're different than other APs, and I was thinking probably every AP is different than the average AP. I think there's a huge variety, and all of us have different strengths, different weaknesses, and
weird in our own ways.
Yeah, I don't think there's any. We have certain things in common, but everybody has strange idiosyncrasies. So just the fact that you're not the average AP, I don't think is either anything to be proud of or ashamed of. It's just, all right.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
I guess I'm a card counter. Like, I guess I just see so many people, like, I just never... So, like, I figured if I have a smaller edge and more hours, it's a little better than having a big edge and small hours. Like, it's just action versus volume, and, you know, and I don't know. It's just, I have to fade more variants, but I guess because I can dissociate, it doesn't really bother me. As long as I know if I can play, you know?
Well, but after fading side bets at Baccarat, pay 40-1 and things, the variance of blackjack must be like air. I mean, it's nothing.
Well, yeah, and there's a thing called double dragons, and it's horrible when they hit. So
you have to bank two times, and then the corporation banks two times, and
if two dragons can get hit back to back. I think it's supposed to be two. Every shoe, I think it's supposed to be two dragons. But the nice thing is these guys, when they bet the side bets, they don't just bet dragon. They just throw them all on. And the side bet can't – not every side bet can hit. Only one hits
per
hand.
Same time, right.
Yeah. So it's like – and I guess if anybody wants to go bank the card rooms, I really don't like them. I don't care. I have fun. Go to Commerce. Tell Mike I said what up. You just have to look at like – I think you just have to bank – I did the math. You have to bank – $200 to $300 in side bet action, and it's like $500 an hour. So yeah, but you're gonna
did
face-
you know, I didn't ask you this while we were talking about it. Commerce isn't in the greatest part of town and isn't known for the spiffiest clientele. I mean, were you worried about your safety at all?
I kept a lot of money on deposit. It was more of the girls that were a problem because they have a lot of working girls there, so they would just come and talk to you. So, like, if they were like chubby and kind of cute, I'd talk to them. But if they were like super hot, I'm like, get the fuck away from me. Like, it was like,
dude. I don't quite get that. But
because like, what are they like?
If they were chubby, they weren't working girls.
No, not even that. Like, no, there's a real reality. She's probably into me. The really super hot girls.
Just here for the money.
I have some issues, so if I'm like super attracted to somebody, I know that it's probably a horrible person for me to be with. So like, that's the first thing.
Your chooser button is broken.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I had to go through enough pain a couple times to realize that.
Did you try Tinder when you were in the Los Angeles area?
I think there's a lot of frustration for guys on Tinder, and like I've some of like my girls, my friends that are female, they'll show me their Tinder account and they'll be like, they'll turn on the phone and be like, yeah, I have 300 messages, and these are average looking women. So I think the ratio of male to female on there is insane. So you really have to stand out. So I guess what most guys do, what I was doing is, all right, I'm just going to swipe on everybody and see who matches. And then if I like them, I'll do it. And so Reddit has a forum. Tinder actually uses an algorithm. So I deleted my account, made a new account, followed the instructions. And the instructions were, don't swipe more than like 30 a day. And say no to a lot of people, only like the really people. And then you're looking more like a desirable user, and they base a score based on that. And anybody you match with, you have to say, like, you have to respond. If you don't, they want female users, so if you match and don't respond, you get dinged. So if you're like, if you're swiping on everybody and only the walruses are matching on you, you know, and
you're not responding.
You're not responding. You're getting dinged even further. And there's a lot of spam. There's a lot of affiliate bots. So do you know what that is? Or I guess I can explain it. So like for the dating websites or webcams, you can sign up and be an affiliate. So if you click a link and sign up, they'll get paid like $6 to $10 an account. So they'll pretend they're females, be like, hey, you know, this is the internet. I just want to verify that you're safe. Sign up at this site and they'll verify you. And, you know, that's what they do for a living.
Yeah.
So
I have a son who's kind of trying to navigate this stuff. And OkCupid and Bumble. And
yeah.
The other problem here in Vegas is...
Your son has a live-in girlfriend.
I have two sons.
Ah,
okay. The problem here in Vegas is so many of the women on there are just cam girls, yeah. Right? So they're trying to get you to click on their link to go, and you end up, you know, they want you to pay them to
exactly.
You know, perform on camera for you or whatever. So, yeah,
I mean, that's their advantage,
a difficult
probably.
Thing to navigate for.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. It's I think it's really, but I have met some cool people now. You know,
so this is your recommendation to not swipe more than 30
delete
a day.
Delete the account, redo the account. I mean, if you're a male, you've probably already done it out of frustration just because, like, you know, it's you got to delete the account, redo it. And if you do that, yeah, you'll have better results. You'll get because all it is you're not getting shown to them. Tinder's not, you're not getting shown to people. You're only getting shown to people who match like you. So what female is swiping every male?
Right.
Bots and walruses. Yeah, I guess that's wrong, but whatever.
Last time you were on, you talked about one of your pipe dreams is to go play in Europe. Have you been there yet?
No, I haven't. I still plan on going, but now I'm like, you know what? I guess the United States isn't really that bad. The limits are much higher. you do get.
You don't have the cash issue of trying to fly to Europe with a bunch of cash.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I can talk about this. I mean, I think this will help players. I do use alternative names. And I found to get legal documentation, which makes me more comfortable using them, is I just went to the county's office. I do pay my taxes. I'm a sole proprietor. And I just registered the name. So now I have state... state documentation that I carry with me, that I filed a DBA, a fictitious business name. When I pay taxes, my sole proprietor is my real name, and then I'll register just another name as my doing business as, which is kind of unorthodox, but they'll take it. And now you walk around and you have something. And I mean, I've been a lot of tight spots. Like, I've been caught using alternative names multiple times and, like red-handed, and two times it has been bad. Nothing's really bad happened. But now I feel like with the experience I have using it and the experience I have with that paperwork, I mean, I feel pretty comfortable with it, you know?
Yeah, they seem to be much more intolerant of machine players that have been using alternative names.
I think Hulk players and machine players and like other stuff, like, they're very nasty too.
Well, the machine players, you know, some people went pretty crazy with the machine stuff.
It's
and
all greed, you know? It's like, I mean, I guess
this
they have
alternative names, or are you talking about using 60 different cards?
Yeah, well, 60 different cards because they're in 60 different names. Yeah.
It's just kind of similar. You know?
And there were groups that were doing a lot more than 60. I mean,
which is crazy.
Yeah.
And some of these offers were pretty big.
And some of these geniuses would go in with a stack of cards and set them on the machine and just go one at a time downloading the free play, you know, from their stack of players' cards. I mean,
I guess that's one thing I want to talk about, and it aggravates me. And, like, maybe I'll get emails and someone will say, like, hey, can, how did you play an alternative name? You know, and, like, I was always really helpful to other people. And now I know it's, like, kind of hurt me a little bit. It's not as easy as it was to get a player's card anymore. And I really think it's cause of that, you know, and, like, it's, I mean, it is what it is. I'll never fault someone for making money, but, like, you know, things die, and I don't know. I just, I'm not going to say I'm against that, but, like, you know, I kind of just want to beat a game straight up, you know. There's nothing wrong with it, but, like, I don't know. If you're going to go in there with 100, it's just, it's like, I don't know. It's like going to Denny's and getting 20% off, like, 100 times. I don't know.
It's like, that's my deal with it, you know?
You know, one of the things I wanted to mention, if you mentioned that you were playing with a betting much higher minimums, which kind of puts you in a whole new category to the casinos and should qualify you for extra EV that you wouldn't have had before in, you know, I mean, you may qualify for loss rebates, airfare refunds, I mean, things like that.
When I, you know, this is my thing. So I always ask about loss rebates, but I noticed the casino getting uncomfortable. So I'm assuming they got hit up pretty hard with them.
Yeah.
Like, or just like, not getting uncomfortable, but just like not giving me definite answers. And then my next thing is like, well, hey, I understand, but do you mean it's cumulative and you're not trying to do it on a trip? They're like, yeah, if you have a big loss, we're going to look at your losses cumulative per year. You know? So yeah. I'm like, okay. So my next question is like, well, I don't care about a loss replay. Can I get, you know, I like to hit jackpots when I play and I don't really want to waste money on slot machines, but if you give me some free play, I'll love to play it.
Yeah. Or airfare, right?
Yeah. There, which is fun. I mean, I just get the conversation going. And I mean, they're pretty cool. I think this, and I just know they're so, they'll take so long to evaluate you. Like, and the nice thing about betting big minimum and betting, you know, betting high is like that the normal swings of play is 50, 60,000 like a day. You know what I mean? So like you have two winning days and it's just like, oh, cool. Like, you know, that's what he was betting. It's not like you logged 500 hours and right. you're betting 2x700 and you're up. Or 2x500 and you're up 100 grand.
Right. But yeah, you know. The other thing is you can qualify. They have these invitation-only tournaments where they invite 21 guys, you know, to, you know, where the prize money is $250,000 or something. I mean,
you want to know what I like better than that? Yeah. Knowing the days those guys are going to be in the casino and being able to play. You
know? Here at the same time.
Yeah. Right, I mean, like, yeah, you get the EV too, but, like, they're going to be there for 4 days and, like, you barely can play unmolested. You know, like, I think in Caesars in Atlantic City, they have something like that in the summer. I never got invited to it, but I remember just like all their 8-deck, 2 games cut off, turned all into the high limit game. And there's just like silly action all around. And like, they're, I mean, for me, they're real sweaty because they know me there. And like, you know, I could always play. And then any other day I try to play, like, it doesn't work. You know, did I talk about, I talked about the DUI, right?
You talked about the DUI. But your DUI in New Jersey was some 9 years ago. Isn't there a law about if you get more than one DUI in within 10 years, you get really bad things happening to you?
Yes.
And if so, how did you get around that?
Okay. So I had my second DUI. I went to rehab in California. So I knew, like, if you go – first of all, I did want help. Second of all, I knew if you went to rehab, it looks amazing for the court. If you go on your own. So I got my DUI July 20th, 2016. I was in treatment. I mean, I had to spend the night over in a county, not county jail, but in a holding cell. The day I got out, I got a plane. I went to Malibu, and the next day. And in California, the DUI law is like, if you get a DUI, they'll take your license and they'll issue you, a temporary license, but your license is suspended immediately. And I believe this is true. In New Jersey, they don't take your license and you're innocent until proven guilty. So if you push back the court date, you can have your active license for like a year before you go to court. So when I was in treatment, I said, hey, let me go to the DMV. So let me go to the DMV. I use the treatment center as the address on my license. And now I had a California license. And I wasn't, like, so there's a database for people with DUIs. Like, you can't get a license if your license is suspended in another state. But my license technically wasn't suspended. So I got a California license, went back to court,
and New Jersey will have no jurisdiction over another state's license, so they couldn't suspend it. They could only notify California, and they never do. Like, it just doesn't pick up because they're not checking active licenses. They're checking new licenses and renewals. So I did lose my license for 10 years in New Jersey, and I probably will get screwed on my renewal because California has a 5-year license. Yeah, a 5-year license. And, yeah, so I'll turn a 10-year sentence into 5, but then I also found out Colorado, even if you have, like, 20 DUIs, the max penalty on, and this is the only state like this, will have only a 1-year loss of license. So if you move to Colorado and declare residency, if you've lost your license for 1 year, you can pay a attorney to go in front of the DMV courts and look at your license reinstated in Colorado. So, I mean, I do have options. I should have moved to, like, Arizona or Florida. But, you know, at the time, I really needed support with people. I was breaking away from my family. And, you know, the nice thing about that treatment center I went to, they had, like, alumni community. So, like, for a year, I stayed, like, super close. I didn't go to jail. I wound up being able to volunteer at this charity. And that's been really rewarding, like, you know. Actually, you know what? I shouldn't use the word volunteer because it sounds kind of like I got sentenced to community service. But I did stay longer. It's a woman and children's shelter. It's in Culver City. It's called Miriam's House. And the woman were addicts. They either gave birth to their children when they were high or the kids got taken away. It's a sober living. They need 60 days to get into it. And it's an 18-month program, and they have a 95% success ratio to get the kids back into that house. Then there's free therapy for the children, free therapy for the mothers, parenting classes, free occupation. So they have tutors come in. Most of them are going back to college so they can actually earn. And then they also match their paycheck for 18 months when they're working. So when they graduate through the program, they actually can move out and start lives. So I started going there, and I made some really cool bonds with the kids. And yeah, like, I go there once in a while now. I'm done with all the hours, and it's a really cool experience.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I'm pretty happy.
So what's next?
Not
Europe.
Not Europe.
Like in the U.S.
Let's see. I'm not so obsessed with money anymore. It's just like money was always like my self-worth and like, oh my God, I need to beat my father. Like, that was my thing, you know? And now it's like, once that got worked out, it's just like, okay, I like nice things. I need to make money, and I have less anxiety if I just work and, you know, just make money. And I'm probably going to go on a trip, you know, every other week now. I haven't played in a while. It feels good to be back. But, you know, I'm not going to sacrifice relationships anymore. Like, I just for 3 years, I didn't really have many friends. I didn't date. I just went around every week to a different casino. And now that I look back on it, it kind of was needed because, like, I was working with my family. And, like, that, if I didn't have blackjack, like, I would have never been able to separate, you know?
Mm.
So, like, It was interesting. But I will say the happiest I was playing is when I had, like, some part-time job that I could work on my own hours to break it up and then go on a trip. Like, I think when it's just, if you're by yourself, single, and you're just playing, like, there's no amount of hours. I mean, you can just work all the time, and then life is like, you're like, did I really just...
It's not much of a life.
Yeah, what's the point of life?
Yeah.
You get tired of the nice dinners, you get tired of the rooms, and it's just like, okay. So I think it's like everything else. I think if you have balance, it can be a really rewarding lifestyle. You know? Do you guys find that similar? Or?
Yeah, I could not play all the time. I mean, you know, getting married was the best thing that ever happened to me, and definitely led to much more balance, and I was much happier, and... You know, and then having kids changes everything. You can't travel as much, definitely overseas. I mean, I did some after I had kids, but it gets cut down a lot less. So, you know, you want to do your traveling while you can, if you do want to go overseas.
Well, I do want to get the, you know, I would like to get the money now, and, you know, I think maybe, I think, like, probably down the road, I probably would start some business. You know, the car wash, you know, it looks really good. Like, if you go in Compton or Englewood, these laundromats that are for sale. Like, there's some laundromats that are, I mean, they're in the ghetto, but, you know, they're a pretty good return, and they're, like, owner absentee. So, it's something I've been looking at, you know, where it's, like, you can do a combo of both.
Hmm.
You know.
You know, when I first moved here to Vegas, and I was living in an apartment and going to a laundromat, and, you know, I always thought about the idea of having, like, an upscale laundromat that would have televisions and pool tables and, you know, stuff to do so that, you know, you get young people in there doing their laundry, they want to have stuff to do, and it would be a place to actually hang out.
Exactly. Well, I think,
and if you could get a liquor license, that would really be good.
They're not that expensive in California.
Liquor license?
Yeah, I don't. Not,
but can you get a liquor license at a laundromat?
I'm sure.
I mean, when I was here, this was Vegas, right? So my laundromat was three doors down from a bar, and at that time, every bar in Las Vegas had plastic go cups at the door. Huh. You would pour your drink into the go cup when you left, and then go get in your car and drive. There was no open liquor law in here. It was insanity. But I used to go to the, we would go to the bar, get our drinks, and then just walk over to the laundromat and do our laundry. And also there was a barber there that I would go get my hair cut at 3 in the morning, and we would drink and while we were getting our hair cut.
I mean, I think there's a way around everything. Like, maybe you, just, like, you probably wouldn't register the liquor license as a laundromat, but you probably could legally have one for that entity.
Yeah, I don't think you could do that as an absentee owner, though. I mean, you need somebody there maintaining.
Well, the numbers are ridiculous. Like, I just never thought they make that money. But there's some laundromats, I guess, like what I was looking at, when you just search them, like, they're selling for $3 million. They're making $750,000 per year.
Wow.
Yeah. Like,
in the ghetto.
Well, yeah, because those apartments don't have
washers in the
You know, in complex. Venice, though, too. Venice isn't really the ghetto. I mean, it's seedy there, but there's, like, no air conditioning, and there's a lot of, like, the west side of L.A., it's like...
Well, Venice is right at the beach, right? So even inland is still a mile from the beach, and so less air conditioning is needed. You just open the window, and the sea air blows through.
I don't know. I still need air conditioning. I mean, it's just, I mean, after I got out of treatment, I lived in this, like, a sober living there for like 2 months just to be around people. And it didn't have air conditioning. And I paid for, like, I tell you what, that's a good business too. It's like they're charging $5,000 to $10,000 per room just calling it a sober living. And they're full. They're turning garages into bedrooms. It's interesting at the least, but, you know, it looked really good for court, and I wanted to try it, but, you know, I was in, like, the top room, and there was no air conditioning, and I'm like, dude, I'm paying you guys, like, $5,000 a month, and I have a room and no air conditioning. They're like, yeah, it's Venice. Nobody has air conditioning. And I'm like, I don't get that.
All right. This is fun. Thank you. Thank you, Small Cap. Next time we want to hear about Europe or wherever else you've gone on your adventures, you do things a bit differently than... our other guests do. So this is very interesting. Richard, thank you. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.